From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast. You can subscribe to this pod on Apple Podcasts and download the Wildcaster app available on the App Store and Google Play. I'm Justin Spears, your host. My co-host with me, Dominic Pachaco. Dom, how you doing, my man?
Good. We're starting to fire these things off. Two in a few days here. It's that time of year. Pac-12 basketball.
The conference of champions.
Bring out the Bill Walton impressions.
It's that time of year.
Is what that means.
It's that time of year. Well, we have a fun podcast for you guys. We're going to be talking about Sean Miller's comments about, quote unquote, I can't save the Pac-12. That's a comment that I really want to get into, but we'll talk about that in just a little bit. And then plus, we'll also talk about Arizona moving forward as they get ready to take on the California Golden Bears in Berkeley. Dom, you're a Bay Area guy. You're from the NorCal area. How far is wine country Sonoma from Berkeley?
Over an hour. Okay. Hour and a half. It's East Bay, so it's a little bit of a drive. But
okay.
Growing up, my family, my cousins were always Cal fans. I was impartial to the Bay Area schools growing up, but I had an uncle and my cousins were always huge Cal fans, hated Stanford, all that noise. So It was always entertaining watching them. Football more so than basketball, but it was always entertaining.
I was gonna say, like, who played at Cal? I know Jason Kidd played at Cal. And then outside of Cal basketball players, I can't really think of anybody else.
That's probably one of the top ones, right?
Leon Poe.
That's for
is one
someone.
I can think
Leon
of.
Leon Poe.
That's one hell of a name. I haven't heard that name
when
in
you
a
start
while.
Making a list of names we thought wouldn't come up on the podcast. That might be near the top. Leon Poe.
But we'll talk more about Arizona Cal coming up in just a little bit. But Arizona taking down Stanford on Wednesday night, they beat them 75-70. It was a game where I really thought Arizona was going to lose. I honestly thought Arizona was going to lose that game, and I'll tell you why. Because in the second half, Arizona was shooting terrible. I mean, they were at a point where they were shooting under 20% in the second half, and it wasn't looking good. Cal got off to like a 7-point lead. I think that was the largest lead of the game. Or Stanford got off to a 7-point lead. And Arizona just could not stay out of foul trouble. Not only did Chase Jeter foul out, but Dylan Smith picked up 3 fouls. Ira Lee was also playing on eggshells with 3 fouls. Ryan Luther also got into foul trouble. So important pieces for Arizona all got into foul trouble, but they weathered the storm. Arizona was able to hold off Stanford. Ira Lee, I thought, was one of the biggest storylines of that game. He had a career-high 12 points, and he's had games where he's had more rebounds, but I think in terms of his clutchness and what he brought to Arizona on Wednesday night, that was without a doubt Ira Lee's best game as an Arizona Wildcat.
I would completely agree with
you.
It's hard to combat that because he put up a career high 12 points. He was effective on the boards, and sure, he was in foul trouble. I think this is the problem with Ira Lee, and our editor, Ryan Finley, said this to me last night. The problem is, maybe it wasn't Ryan. Ryan, if I'm throwing this quote at you and it wasn't you, let me know. But I'm pretty sure it was Ryan. Ira Lee is an intriguing option to start for Arizona. But he has a knack of getting into foul trouble.
Yeah.
And that's why you kind of like to have him come off the bench a little bit more. But let me read you some numbers here. Through Arizona's first three Pac-12 conference games.
Okay. Stats by Dom.
I'm going to read you two numbers because one of them, I'll read you three. I'll throw in all three. 35.8%.
Okay.
56.6% and 54%. Those are the opposing field goal percentages by each team. Now, the Colorado game was the 35.8%. That's good. I mean, if you can hold Colorado to that with some of the explosiveness they have on offense, that's good. But they've gotten now lit up 2 games in a row by Cedric Bearfield and Kaze Akpala, 2 games in a row where they both almost put up 30, had career games
Yeah.
against Arizona. And My thing with Ira Lee is his starting spot would be Emmanuel Acotts. And Justin, you and I talked about this Wednesday night after the Arizona-Stanford game. If Emmanuel Acotts is starting for his defense, and I might have touched on this in the last podcast, and this is never a knock on Acotts because I really like what he brings to the team. But if he's starting for his defense and Arizona is getting torched now two games in a row, why not just look at the possibility of starting Ira Lee?
Yeah.
See what he can bring you. Cause if his roof is as high as we thought it was a year ago, I mean, isn't that upside greater? And bring Acotts off the bench. He can still be valuable off the bench. I think the problem with that is Ira Lee's foul trouble. He'd have to be a little bit more disciplined, but I think his offensive upside that he's shown. And again, he hasn't, the numbers aren't there. I mean, 12 points is his career high, but I think his upside is pretty valuable for Arizona.
His skill set almost kind of reminds me of a little bit of Blake Griffin in a way, just because he works mostly around the paint area, whether it's layups or even, you know, little mid-range jump shots, you know, off the elbow or something like that. He's only attempted one three-pointer this year, and he's not going to be this ultra scorer. And honestly, does Arizona really need Ira Lee to score? They have in the post.
Emmanuel Acotts not scoring.
In the post. And that's the thing. Emmanuel Acotts not scoring, but Chase Jeter's scoring. Mm-hmm. Brandon Randolph is scoring. Brandon Williams is,
not,
is scoring.
Not efficiently, but yeah. Brandon Randolph is scoring.
But you have your scores. You have people that's going to be able to put the ball in the bucket. And I think I really understands his role on this team. He wants to come in and be that spark off the bench. He wants to be the defensive presence that Sean Miller wants in the front court. And you watch him play, he's all over the place. He's energetic. He's the best. He's the best for photos because he always makes like weird facial expressions.
I really
yeah. And I just think he's this player that, like I said, Blake Griffin's skill set. But I wouldn't be surprised, and I actually talked about this on the radio show on ESPN Tucson, if Ira Lee, if he were to start, it would almost be like when Sean Miller put Jesse Perry in the starting lineup in the 2010-11 season over Jamel Horn. Now, you go with Jamel Horn because he is better on offense. Emmanuel Acotts is better on offense. But what Ira Lee gives you as a starting power forward may just be the missing piece for Sean Miller and this year's team. I'm not saying that you're going to put Ira Lee in the starting lineup, bam, Arizona Final Four contender. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that at all. But what we saw against Stanford, I think Ira Lee is the kind of player that can step in into the starting lineup and can give Arizona and Sean Miller what he wants. And that's why he was recruited to Arizona. A lot of people forget sometimes, Ira Lee was a highly ranked recruit. He wasn't five-star McDonald's All-American, but he was still a four-star player that almost every country or every program in the country was going after. So he's got talent. He's got the stars, the rankings behind it as an underclassman. If I'm Sean Miller and I look at Ira Lee, if he continues this, not only against Cal, but against the LA schools, against the Oregon schools in the next couple of weeks, I would have to make a decision. Yeah, put Ira Lee into the starting lineup.
And that's the thing is, again, no knock on Emmanuel Acotts here, but if Arizona's looking for a spark or looking for more production at a four spot, like Emmanuel Acotts and Ira Lee would play, why not see what you can get elsewhere? The bench, again, Justin, you and I talked about this Wednesday night. The bench almost played better than the starting five against Stanford, mm-hmm. Arizona's bench. You saw Arizona's starting five kind of let Stanford hang around early, jumped out to a decent lead. Arizona had a good start, but Stanford hung around early, and Stanford had a run in the second half to come back, tie the game, and make it close down the stretch against Arizona's starting five when they were all in there. Granted, people were playing with foul trouble, Chase Jeter among them, and who eventually fouled out, but if Arizona's bench is putting up that much production, I mean, that's a lot on Ira Lee. He had 12 points off the bench. That was off the bench.
Yeah.
He played 18 minutes. Emmanuel Acotts played 13, got up four shots, was 1 of 4 from the field, 2 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists. So, look, Acotts does it all. sparingly. You know, I don't want to say does it all, like he's putting up massive numbers in every statistical category, but he can give you a lot. He offers a lot. I kind of, and I've thought about this a lot this year. I don't know if we've ever talked about it, but, and again, he's not this kind of defensive player, but he kind of reminds me, as far as his skill set and what he brings to the team, of a Rondae Hollis-Jefferson.
I really.
Yeah, no. Emmanuel Aycott does.
Yeah.
And let me tell you why, because I'm sitting here making the argument he can come off the bench. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson came off the bench. He was still valuable. Mm-hmm. He was more valuable off the bench than he was in the starting lineup. Mm-hmm. And that was because of his defense. That's because of what he brought offensively. He was versatile. And I think Aycott can be that guy. I'm just saying, why not look if you can get a little bit more production at a four spot and get a few more points, a few more rebounds per game early, and then bring a guy like Aycott off the bench to hold down your defense if that's what you're comfortable doing if you're Sean Miller.
And Aycott's versatile enough to where he could play any position between 1 through 4.
Mm-hmm.
He can't play center. But Sean Miller has said last year and this year, Emmanuel Aycott is one of the team's best passers. I haven't really seen that. He makes smart passes. I don't think I've seen him make a dumb pass or create a head-scratching turnover. But I like Aycott coming off the bench instead. Like you said, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. If Sean Miller wants Aycott to reach that kind of level, then why not experiment? Why not move some pieces around to see what works and what doesn't work? It's just, unfortunately for Sean Miller, he's in a spot right now where he's like, shoot, guys, we've won 3 straight Pac-12 games. You know, we're doing good right now.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, what we're doing is working, so why would I even want to touch anything? So I don't imagine Sean Miller making an adjustment to the starting lineup until things start going south. That probably won't happen against Cal. But
no.
Next week, they come home. They play against the Oregon schools. We'll see what happens there. And then they got to go to the LA schools. And that's probably where things are going to get a little dicey, because they got to play at USC, at UCLA. And then the following week, they got to go up to Tempe and play at ASU. So, yeah, I mean, if I'm Sean Miller, I would consider making some adjustments with the starting lineup. But like they always say, if it's not broke, don't fix it. But when I looked at last night with Ira Lee off the bench, with Chase Jeter fouling out, and this is, I don't think people talk about this enough. You said this. Ira Lee seems like he can't go 30 seconds without fouling somebody.
Mm-hmm.
He had 3 fouls when Chase Jeter fouled out. And how many personal fouls did Ira Lee finish with? Okay, he finished with 4. So by the time Chase Jeter fouled out in the end of the game, Ira Lee only picked up 1 foul. He played aggressive enough to where he didn't pick up a foul, and he knew that, hey, I can't foul because if I foul, I'm pretty much hurting my team. And that's where I give kudos to him for his maturity and how he handled that game down the stretch.
You think Ira Lee or Emmanuel Aycott is a better rebounder?
Ira Lee, without a doubt.
Again, I mean, we look at Arizona's flaws this year. Rebounding is one of them. In this game against Stanford, with the exception of Brandon Randolph, who had 8 rebounds, Chase Jeter led the team with 5, and he only played 18 minutes. He sat the last 13 minutes of the first half and still led the team in rebounds with 5, again, with the exception of Brandon Randolph's 8. Ira Lee was second with 4. Aycott had 3. Again, I agree with you. Sean Miller's probably not going to mess with the lineup as long as they're winning. But you said it. They got some tougher games coming up after this Bay Area road trip wraps up at Cal.
Yeah.
On Saturday, and they're going to have to start winning, keep winning. I mean, and if I release that guy who can give a spark off the bench, it might be smart for Sean Miller to experiment with it sooner than later.
The other headline out of this game was the injury with Justin Coleman.
Mm-hmm.
And Coleman was hit by, I believe it was Josh Sharma. He came over with an arm, and it hit Coleman where the sun doesn't shine, right in the groin area. And when I watched the replay, I was like, ooh, goodness gracious, that's hurt. I thought he was grabbing his groin because he got hit in that area. But apparently Justin Coleman kind of re-aggravated that shoulder because he was grabbing it a little bit. And when he inbounded the ball, he wasn't using that left arm at all. He was just strictly using the right. Mm-hmm. That's another area of concern for Arizona because Coleman suffered a left shoulder injury in practice last Monday, it was.
It was the 31st or whatever. It was right in December. It was the last Monday of December, I'm pretty sure, but right around there.
But they picked up, or Justin Coleman picked up that injury, and Sean Miller made it seem like, guys, it's not the end of the world. He's at a point with his injury to where he's not really at risk, but we just want to limit him. We want to watch him. We want to make sure that he's getting it taken care of. Well, he was holding on to that shoulder against Stanford, and it did not look good. And I can relate because I've had my fair share of shoulder injuries, specifically the left shoulder. Dislocated it 5 times playing football. And it's one of those injuries to where if you don't get it taken care of, if you don't rest it for a while, you can re-aggravate it in the most dumbest ways possible. I remember I was in class. I was sitting in Algebra 2, or might have been pre-cal. Mm-hmm. And I sneezed, and my shoulder kind of like jolted out of socket and went back in.
Man.
And I was like, oh, damn. So I know what Justin Coleman's going through.
Yeah, and that's sneezing in your high school math class, and he's, you know, taking a hard foul with 17 seconds left in an aggressive Pac-12 basketball game. Quick note on Justin Coleman. By the way, shoulder injuries, just dislocated anything is like one of the last injuries I'd want to have.
Yeah.
Just because if I dislocate, like if I knew my shoulder was out of place or anything, my knee, ankle, wrist, whatever it may be, I just would probably pass out on the spot. Like I would not be able to deal with it.
It's a weird, sensation because when it pops out, you're like, oh no. Like when it happened a few times in football, I would like almost like try to move my arm a little bit and I felt like my arm was locked. Like I couldn't move anything. So I'm like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? And then you feel it just like roll back in. Mm. And it's like this sensation where you're like, oh man, that hurts so good. Like it hurts, but I'm just so freaking happy that my shoulder is back in place.
One more quick note on Justin Coleman. This was Bruce Pascoe reporting via the Arizona Desert Swarm. Justin Gainey said on the radio after the Stanford game, quote, "It's good that we have an extra day here in the Bay to let him, Justin Coleman, rest and recover, but I think he's going to be okay." Sean Miller didn't talk about it post-game, and Justin Gainey sounds upbeat. Justin Coleman was pictured smiling in practice on Thursday, so
it looks like he's good.
It seems like he's okay. Don't expect anything to be amiss at Cal on Saturday. Justin, another topic, one involving Sean Miller on Thursday.
This is the juicy part.
He told John Wilner of Mercury News, the Pac-12 hotline. Let me pull up the quote here. On the state of Pac-12 basketball, Sean Miller said, quote, "The one thing that I really feel is that right now I'm not part of the solution," end quote. Justin, you and I sat here for about 10 minutes before coming on air to try to figure out what he meant, because I saw multiple people tweet this quote today, and it was obviously a topic of discussion. I couldn't, for the life of me, there's two things that it could have meant. It could have meant, A, I'm not part of the solution, as in he's not helping the Pac-12 right now because Arizona is not where it has been in years past, or B, he's not part of the solution because there's Arizona and then there's everybody else. And he said something else in the same article. Again, you can find it on the Mercury News Pac-12 hotline. On a potential fix for the Pac-12, Sean Miller said, quote, "The other thing that's important, and I'll go back to my Atlantic 10 days, is that you can talk about the torchbearers and those teams who carry, but how bad are your bottom teams?" And that's where you and I kind of went, aha. So Sean Miller is essentially saying, and Justin, correct me here if I'm wrong, he's essentially saying that there's Arizona, there's UCLA, who are historically the top two teams in the Pac-12 conference for basketball, and then there's everybody else. And when your bottom teams are really, really bad, it doesn't really matter what the rest of the conference does, especially in these years where everyone in the middle is just kind of eh.
Yeah. this was Sean Miller pretty much saying, guys, listen, I understand that the Pac-12 is down, but you can't be looking at the big boys like UCLA, Arizona, even other schools. Like,
you can throw Oregon in there if you want, recent years at the very least.
They're not going to save the Pac-12, because even when they were good and people are like, oh, look at the Pac-12, Arizona's great, UCLA, they're a top five team, Oregon, they could actually go to the Final Four. The narrative of that year, which was 2016-17, was great. It's Arizona, UCLA, and Oregon, and everybody else. The rest of the Pac-12 was garbage. Sean Miller saying, I can't save the Pac-12, because no matter what, you're going to look at the bottom teams. Washington State isn't going anywhere. Oregon State isn't going anywhere. Cal, they're not going anywhere. So how can I pretty much give the Pac-12 a good look or give it a good rap when these schools aren't really doing anything? I'm looking at Washington State, because they're a school that has been pretty much at the bottom of the Pac-12 ever since Sean Miller has joined the conference. And I'm looking at their record versus other Pac-12 opponents. Washington State has a 28-47 record against Arizona. Against UCLA, they have a 42-94 record. Against USC, exactly 500. Against Washington, 101-178. And that's your rivalry. You only have a 36.2% chance of winning all your games when that's a rivalry. And it's not like Washington is this fantastic program. Yeah, they have their stretch for Lorenzo Romar, but Washington State, the only winning record that, or only winning record they have against other Pac-12 teams are against Colorado, ASU, and Oregon State. Colorado, ASU, and Oregon State. How many Final Fours are between those three teams? Or how many Pac-12 championships has those teams won? That's what Sean Miller's trying to say here is, like, teams like Washington State, Oregon State, they're not going to do anything. They're not going to get any better. They're still going to continue to be one of the worst teams, not only in the Pac-12, but on the West Coast. So why is it our responsibility to essentially carry the torch? Mm-hmm. And I agree with Sean Miller. Yeah, you can't look at programs like Arizona and UCLA. And it's like, hey, you guys need to be winning a lot of games. And you guys need to be going to Final Fours to make the Pac-12 look good. It just doesn't work like that.
When was the last time when was the last time the Pac-12 won a national championship? UCLA in, what was their last title?
It was Arizona
97. Okay, so there you go. Arizona in 1997, and before that it was UCLA in 95. So that was the last time the Pac-12 as a collective conference won a national championship. Again, it's difficult to say because you look just a couple of years ago. Was it 2 years ago when Arizona, Oregon, and UCLA were all in the Sweet 16? Oregon made the Final Four that year, and it looked like the Pac-12 was going to start kind of hitting a stretch where at least those top four teams in Arizona, Oregon, UCLA, who was that fourth team that year? Remember there were four, unless it was just the three. Am I just thinking of the three?
Yeah, I think it's just the three.
I could have sworn there was a fourth.
Like USC or something like that.
Yeah, maybe. Well, regardless, those three teams were in the Sweet 16. That's a top-heavy conference, but it's the same thing that Sean Miller's saying. Even if it's Arizona, Oregon, and UCLA, it's still a problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're still going to be dragged down by all these other teams. Sean Miller said one more interesting thing I want to talk about here, because I think it's a pretty, I don't want to say polarizing, because there's some in between on it, but he said at the end of the day, November and December are the two biggest months in college basketball, and he said that because of the Pac-12's poor non-conference,
yeah,
not only schedule but their performance.
I was going to say because everybody, once they got into Pac-12 play, there was this jumble of teams. They all have similar records, so conference play is going to be crucial. Where usually in years past, when teams go into conference play, you already know who your big hitters are going to be. You already know the teams that are going to finish in the top half of the conference, and those teams are going to be it for the NCAA tournament. So since all those teams all have the same record, unless somebody just goes on a tear and beats everybody up in conference play, everybody's just going to constantly beat on each other, and it's going to be cannibalism. Everybody's just going to beat up on each other, and they're all going to have the same record, and that's why people are saying Pac-12, they're probably only going to have two teams enter the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. And
the Pac-12 is?
The Pac-12.
Well, two if they're lucky.
Yeah.
At the very most.
And it's cannibalism. That's why records in the month of November and December matter, because you can afford to lose a few games in conference play. Look at Arizona. In Sean Miller's heyday, well, he's still technically in his heyday, but with like...
He hopes he is.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, one would hope.
But with the Aaron Gordon years or the Stanley Johnson years, those great teams, what was something that they all had in common? They all ran through the non-conference play. They would enter the Pac-12 schedule with like what? One loss, two losses, and then they're able to afford four, five, six losses in the Pac-12. Then they can go to the NCAA tournament and be a top seed and everything is all good. The conference, like I said, they all have similar records. Each team felt like they had like four, three, five, six losses. Mm-hmm. And then they're unable to afford to lose a few games of conference play.
I disagree with Coach here in one aspect, and it's because there's one big variable to what he's saying. Again, I'll read you the quote again. It says, quote, at the end of the day, November and December, the two biggest months in college basketball, end quote. The one big variable is what conference are you playing in? If you're in the ACC, you're playing against Duke, Clemson, when they were good, you're playing against Duke. I shouldn't have brought Clemson in that conversation. Sorry. Omit Clemson. You're playing against Duke. You're playing against North Carolina. I know. Exactly. Exactly. You're playing against teams like Duke and North Carolina. You go to the SEC. You're playing against teams like Kentucky, Florida, who are good every single year, and you can beat up on each other. But every time you beat one of those teams, it's going to be a huge step, a huge boost on your resume. Arizona, their biggest win all year, their biggest stamp on an NCAA tournament resume is probably a win at UConn, a win against Iowa State.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, Big 12 is another one. There's so many good teams in those conferences where the November-December argument becomes invalid because you have a good enough conference to play good teams all year. And sure, there might be some beating up, but when you win those conferences, then it looks a lot better. The only reason that November and December are so big in the Pac-12 is because when you win the Pac-12 this year, it's just going to be like, okay, you get your bid, let's move on. Mm-hmm. There's no more than that. We're in the SEC, ACC, Big 12, Big 10 even. I mean, almost every other Power 5 conference,
So you're saying like if you had a cupcake non-conference schedule, then the month of January and February is important to you, where maybe if you have a tough non-conference schedule, maybe those months are more important to you because then you can get into conference play and take care of business.
It just depends.
Like a team like Gonzaga or something like that.
Right. Well, yeah, and Gonzaga is kind of an outlier because of their situation. They don't really have anyone to play in conference play. So sure, Gonzaga, yeah, obviously November, December are the biggest months for them, because if they don't make a stamp, if they don't make an impression there, then they're not going to have a lot of ground to gain in the conference. But what I'm saying is that if you're Virginia or Duke or Tennessee in the SEC,
Duke,
I mean, any of those teams, you're going to have enough ground. Even if you fall, even if you lose some tough non-conference games in November and December, you're going to have enough teams on your schedule over the next 3 months in January through March to make up for whatever your downfalls were in non-conference play. And you can't say that about the Pac-12. The only Power 5 team conference that you can say that about is the Pac-12, because they are so, so thin at the top. I mean, you said it, Justin. They're getting two in max. Two in
dude,
max.
Dude.
So at the end of the day, it's who did you play in non-conference? Who did you beat? That's where the resumes are going to be decided in the, yeah, Pac-12, whereas in every other Power 5 conference, I think they're heavily decided in conference play. Mm. And in their conference tournaments, too. I mean, whoever wins the conference, obviously they're in, but where they're seated is going to, yeah, weigh heavily. Mm-hmm. If Duke or Virginia get the one seed, it's probably going to be who wins the conference. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Pac-12, you have to win to get, mm-hmm, in.
Arizona, they take on Cal this weekend. Real quick before we go, Arizona is obviously favored in this game. Does Arizona win this weekend against Cal?
Man, they better. If they don't, I was looking at this last night. If they had lost to Stanford or Cal, if they had lost either one of these games in the Bay Area, what would have they had to do to make up for it? They'd probably have to dominate. I mean, they're already in a position where they have to win the Pac-12, probably.
Yeah.
They'd have to do it and do it in a dominating fashion to get in if they lost to Cal or Stanford. If they lose to Cal, it's just a sad state of Arizona basketball right now. They're the worst team in the Pac-12. They're probably one of the worst Power 5 teams that there are, if not the worst. So there's no chance Arizona loses to Cal. And saying that, don't be surprised if it's another grinded out game. That's just how things go this year. When's the last time Arizona blew out a Pac-12 opponent? It's just not going to happen very often this season when everybody in the Pac-12 isn't playing that well. In saying that, they should beat Cal.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm on board. I think Arizona should take care of business against the Cal Golden Bears. But it's funny, we brought up the 2013-14 team. Mm-hmm. I thought Arizona was going to take care of business against Cal on the road.
It was the 2012, when Brandon Ashley broke
his foot. That was right when Arizona was undefeated.
Yeah, 21-0, number one in the country.
And all because of a game-winning shot, Arizona loses to Cal.
Yeah, buzzer beater, rush the court. Yep.
Brandon Ashley broke his foot.
Yep. Even the year before, before we came on air, we were talking about in 2013 when Arizona lost at home to Cal.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone thought Arizona, I mean, at home to Cal. How do you lose at McHale Center to the Cal Golden Bears? Granted, they were a little bit better back then, but it's just not going to happen this week.
No way.
Maybe it's a close game. If it's a close game, give all the credit to Cal and devalue Arizona a little bit. But look, Arizona is the favorite in the Pac-12 in my eyes right now, and I think they keep things rolling in Berkeley this week. Again, you said it, though, a lot of big games coming up for Arizona. They got the UCLA, USC road trip, then they play at ASU. So a couple big weeks coming up here for Arizona. We're going to decide what they're really made of. Again, it's the Pac-12. They got to own it.
And that's why this week is huge. Or the game against Cal is huge, because if they take care of business, it gives them just a little bit of cushion.
Almost in a position where you have to start 4-0 going into these next couple weeks.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at the Wildcast, or give us a like on Facebook and Instagram. And also, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, and you better download the Wildcaster app. It's free. You don't need a subscription to the Arizona Daily Star, and you can get that on the App Store and Google Play. For Dom, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.